Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.
First of all, your author would like to apologize for the world he's created. He knows it's ridiculous. The fact that the world he lives in is also ridiculous is no excuse. The author's job is to make sense of the senseless, to create coherence from incoherence. But if the author's job is also to reflect the reality as he perceives it onto the page, then what is he meant to do when the world he lives in loses all sense? Consider this. As he writes, 34% of his neighbors have gone to war against tiny pieces of fabric worn across the nose and mouth. They believe these tiny pieces of fabric are robbing them of their personal freedom. And so they have declared war against these pieces of fabric, even as scientists present evidence that those same tiny pieces of fabric will protect them from a deadly virus sweeping the globe, killing millions. But for the 34%, the fabric, not the virus, is the enemy. They lay dying in hospitals from a disease they argue does not exist.
That's Noah Hawley reading an excerpt from his novel, Anthem. Noah is one of the most masterful storytellers working today in any medium. He's the creator of the FX anthology series Fargo and the executive producer for the hit Marvel TV series Legion. He's also a prolific novelist. Anthem is Noah's sixth book. It's the gripping, suspenseful story of a group of young people on a quest. When they join forces with a man whose sister is being held captive by a billionaire known as the Wizard, their quest turns into a rescue mission. Hawley has bottled our complicated societal anxiety and turned it into a literary thriller.
One of the things that I had to do in thinking about this story, which started out to be a novel about characters and ended up being a novel about a time and place, which is America and at this moment, involved, you know, in 2018, 2019, trying to think two or three steps ahead to what America would be like in 2022. You know, one of the things that was very clear and one of the things that the book is about is the sort of spiraling anxiety in adults, but also in our children. We have spent the last 5-10 years, you know, in an increasing state of anxiety about the world. Whatever your personal, political, religious beliefs, I think we can say that we're all more on edge than we used to be. And our children feel that. And unfortunately, anxiety is a form of mental illness. And as mental illness increases, you know, suicide becomes something we really have to watch out for. And so in thinking about a kind of catalyst to push this book forward, this idea of the contagiousness of suicide, you know, it's an idea like any other idea, that became a driving force of the book, that something was happening to our children and our characters had to spring into action to try to save the day.
Mm-hmm. Since we're here in Wisconsin, we have to ask you about the first case of the suicide epidemic that people noticed, Brad Carpenter in Madison, Wisconsin. Was there a story that inspired this?
Poor Brad. No. There is no underlying deep meaning to Brad's residing in Wisconsin, other than that it's a beautiful place to live and a senseless place to pass.
Very well said, yeah. One of the most surprising things that you do in Anthem is to occasionally interrupt your story to address the reader directly as the author of the book. Why did you decide to do this?
Well, there were a couple of reasons. One, as I tried to figure out how to put this story together, my mind went back to when I first read Slaughterhouse-Five, which was the Kurt Vonnegut novel about his World War II experience. Kurt, in that book and in many subsequent books, inserted himself as the storyteller on the page as a way to kind of interact directly with the reader and to say, bear with me, I'm doing the best that I can. These are hard things to talk about. What I didn't want to do is to hide behind my story. I wanted it to be clear to the reader, you know, I'm worried, and I know you're worried. I'm worried about my kids, I'm worried about my country, and I know that you feel the same way. I'm worried about the planet and climate change and all of these things. And so I'm going to tell you the story to kind of try to explain what I'm worried about, where I think the problems come from, and what we might do to solve them. But let's do it through a story, because the last thing you need is another pundit that will only make you more anxious.
Yeah. It's very frightening how much Anthem captures the absurdity of the world we currently live in. And to riff off a sentence in your book, what kind of collateral damage of living a life of the mind have you experienced by writing the book?
You know, the work that I've done on Fargo set me up for a way of looking at the world, right? And, you know, as I developed the seasons 2 and 3 and 4 of Fargo, I really started to think about this formula in which irony without humor is just violence, right? You think about a Kafka story in which a man is on trial for a crime. They won't even tell him what it is, right? And it's a joke, but the punchline is him. It's not funny, right? And, you know, in the reading I did about the world is ridiculous, I'm not saying there's anything humorous about it. I'm saying we've reached the level of absurdity that is beyond humor. Every day you listen to the news and you think you can't make this stuff up, whether it's the sort of cosplay insurrection of the QAnon shaman or the MyPillow guy as the closest person to the president. You know, there's a certain ridiculousness to life right now that is hard to process, because it's not, you know, serious problems have serious solutions, but absurd problems, what solutions do those have? And I don't think we ever thought to prepare an answer for that.
Yeah. You also include elements of magical realism in Anthem. Was this a way to give yourself a break from writing about such dark subject matter?
Well, it's certainly a way, as Gabriel Garcia Marquez discovered, to turn something ugly into something beautiful, to take tragedy, the sort of multi-generational tragedies of 100 years of solitude, and create something beautiful out of it. But there was also this line, you know, there's a character, a 15-year-old boy who calls himself the prophet, and he quotes these statistics saying that, you know, 30%+ of Americans believe that angels and demons walk among us. And he's asked, well, do you believe that that's real? And he says, well, I believe that the more people believe it's real, the realer it becomes. In other words, that the level of magical thinking that Americans are doing is making the world a more magical place. And that boundary between reality and fantasy breaks down in this book, as it feels like it's been breaking down in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of breakdown and the prophet, something else that the prophet says at one point in your book is, the land we call America is having a nervous breakdown. So I'm curious, what do you think it's going to take to recover from this nervous breakdown, or is it too late?
I mean, there are smarter people than me who are really trying to figure that question out. But I guess one of the things that I would say is we suffer from a deep lack of respect between people with differing opinions. And we used to have that phrase, agree to disagree, right? Which is a very respectful phrase. It's like, you believe what you believe and I believe what I believe. And I'm not saying that your beliefs are any less than mine. They're just not the same as mine. And let's agree to disagree. I think the problem becomes when there's two things. I mean, the first is satire, right? And I love watching Seth Meyers or Stephen Colbert or John Oliver, any of the great satirists of our moment. But I'm not sure that making fun of people is getting us any closer to each other. It might be an easy joke, but I don't think that it's helping. And, you know, at the same time, describing people who don't believe what you believe as evil, that's not helping either.
Mm-hmm. In his latest book, The Story Paradox, Jonathan Gottschall argues that storytelling can bind people together, but it can also tear people apart. And that's kind of something you just addressed, albeit kind of subtly. But was that something you thought about in terms of finding the right balance between optimism and pessimism for the tone of Anthem?
Yeah, you know, I talk a lot in that sort of end of the book about empathy and how empathy is a very, you know, it's sort of the best worst solution, because empathy is a very powerful force if we're talking about one or two people. I see a homeless child on the street, I feel empathy for that child. I see 1,000 homeless children on the street, empathy breaks down. But, you know, empathy can also be manipulated, right? If you tell a large group of people that they have been victimized and things have been stolen from them, and who doesn't empathize with themselves first and foremost? And you know, when you feel like someone has been wronged, you're looking not just to comfort them, but also to catch the perpetrator of that wrong. And unfortunately, when you have people who believe they've been wronged, they're out to get justice for that wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A few years ago, you started thinking about stories visually. How did this visual thinking inform your creative process while working on Anthem, or did it?
I think there's two ways that we interact with stories. One is intellectually and the other is emotionally, right? And, you know, you think of a David Foster Wallace description of anything, you know, with footnotes, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the precision of that description is very intellectually satisfying, but not necessarily as emotionally moving as something that feels more visual, right? Because when you see it, then the reader brings emotion to it. That's where the visual style for my writing really comes from is, you know, I don't want you to just understand it. I want you to feel it. And it's a collaboration between you and I, the writer, and you, the reader. Is I'll paint the picture and you have the feelings. And, you know, so that's been my approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've read that radio scripts from shows like the BBC Radio's The Goon Show and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy have helped you to broaden your view about what storytelling can be. How so?
Well, you think about, it's similar to reading, but you think about listening to a story. There's sort of no more visual experience for me than listening to a story. My head is full of images, you know, and something like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which was a very comedic, creative, inventive science fiction story, it took your brain to these places that you hadn't imagined before. And it's, on some level, it's why the filmed adaptations have been so underwhelming, is because the pictures that you see in your head are so personal and no one else's interpretation can really match what you see in your head.
In the epilogue of Anthem, you talk about how your daughter Guinevere asked you how you were going to end the book. What did you tell her?
Well, I mean, what I say in the book, as I said, beats me. We had been talking about, she was studying World War I and she's 14, and she was asking me about it, and I said, well, you can't really talk about World War I without talking about World War II, right? Which is that things don't really end. They just lead to other things. And so the ending of a story is always a kind of artifice. But, you know, in this book, you know, which is about this quest that these young people go on, the question is, are they going to be okay? And I thought it was all right to say as the author, I hope so, but I don't know. I'm worried. I'm worried about these kids. I'm worried about my kids. But look what they've accomplished so far. The odds are good that they'll be okay, but it's hard to know. We're right at this tipping point. Unfortunately, we can't see the horizon yet of how our kids are going to be when they grow up. But that's always been the case with parenting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. You're working on a series for FX based on the Alien movie franchise, and the central question that you're exploring is, does humanity deserve to survive? It seems to me that this could also be one of the questions you explored in Anthem. What do you think?
I know. You know, here's the thing. I'm a pretty cheerful guy. You know, I'm a big believer in making the best of things. So it's starting to sound, from your questions, like I'm not. Like I'm a pessimist.
Like yeah, I'm sorry. Pessimist. I'm painting. Yeah. Yeah,
but I think the reality is these are critical questions that we need to explore. And on some level, it's best if optimists explore them, because they're always going to come out on the side of humanity. But yeah, I mean, I think that the question, you know, one of the things that I loved the most about the first two Alien movies is that they weren't just monster movies, right? There were movies about humanity trapped between the sort of primordial parasitic past and this artificial intelligence future, and both are trying to kill us. So we're sort of trapped. We can't go forward and we can't go back, and how are we going to get out of this mess? And that seemed interesting to me. If it was just a bug hunt and we're on the run, I don't know what to do with that. Because even if the show is 60% of the best action and horror you've ever seen. There's still 40%. What are we talking about? What's the show about? And so that requires thematic levels of ideas that are built into it. And I think that setup really provides that for me.
Mm-hmm. Noah Hawley, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us, and congratulations on Anthem. It's a very powerful, timely, and provocative book.
Thank you.
Noah Hawley is the creator of Fargo and the author of the novel Anthem. You can find out more about Noah and his book at wpr.org/beta.
He apparently almost got Elton John, and then Elton John recommended his friend Cat Stevens and suggested that his music might be more suitable.
Coming up, author Heidi Greco talks about one of her all-time favorite films, Harold and Maude. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.